Together, our City Commission meeting of July 28, 2014, to do business in the great city of Winter Park in our free country. I'm going to invite our own electric utility director, Jerry Warren, to come to the stand there to provide our invocation. I'd invite all of you to silence your cell phones with me, along with standing, and then remain standing as we pledge allegiance to our flag.
Let's pray. Almighty God, thank you for allowing us to live in a country where citizens can participate in government. We thank you for that privilege. Thank you for giving us a country where we're allowed to pray in advance of a public meeting like this. Our own Supreme Court narrowly confirmed that right a few weeks ago, and so we know it's a privilege to not take lightly. Thank you for our policymakers, our City Commission. I pray for their wisdom and their discernment. I pray, Lord, as a team of policymakers and staff, that we will deliver good government services for all the citizens of Winter Park. Pray your blessings upon this meeting now. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Jerry. We're going to go to the approval of the agenda. Just one kind of way that Mr. Knight suggested that we treat the budget discussion. Under item 11A, maybe we could just split that into two items, one being the setting of the tentative millage rate. That obviously is an item that requires public input and will certainly take public input, but our budget discussion is really for the commission. I don't want to say it in a work session format, but that's what it'll be like. So at that point, we will not be taking public comment because we'll have at our next meeting, Mr. Knight, beginning, or does
we
it begin today?
We have it as item 4 today.
Oh, that's right, comments. Citizen budget comments. So we'll be able to take citizen comments there. We'll be able to do that at the next two meetings, and then we'll have public hearings, obviously, on the budget in
September.
the two meetings of September. So we'll break that item out into two items, if that's okay, and I'm going to move the agenda as presented then.
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Approve. Approve. Thank you. Let's go ahead then go to the citizen budget comments. If any citizens wish to speak to us about any matters that are coming up in our budget season, we'd certainly love to hear about them.
Joe Terranova, 151 North Virginia Avenue, Winter Park. First of all, I'd like to commend the staff under Randy Knight's direction for coming up with another well-balanced budget and recommending to you not to raise the millage rate. Several points. One of my favorite things, of course, is the support for the library, and I urge you to approve that as recommended by the city manager. The only other comment I would like to make has to do with the trees. I'm pleased to see the amount of money that's been set aside in the budget for the removal of the dangerous trees. I think that's very good. But every time we remove a tree, we leave a space. And we should consider replacing those trees as soon as possible. I don't know what your replacement schedule is and whether you have replaced trees, but in those areas where I have seen trees cut down, I have not seen one replaced yet. So I urge you to consider that, because if we don't, we're going to have a denuded city. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Other citizens wishing to speak to us about the budget? I'm sure the city manager will have noted that, so in terms of tree replacement. Seeing any other further comments? This isn't your last chance. You'll have plenty of opportunity to give us input going forward, both in August and in September. So that will close the citizen budget comment part out. I'm blessed to have a brief mayor's report, and I think Chief White is going to be the man conducting this, so something very special. Chief, I'm just standing with you, so I'll just turn the microphone to you.
Mayor and Commissioners, it gives me a great deal of pleasure this afternoon to bring before you
a young man who is very much due our recognition as a community. I want to tell you a little bit about the story. I received a phone call several weeks ago from Rosa Hutchins, mom, and said that, you know, I have a young man that I think needs to be recognized. And she told me the story of the day that he was with, that he brought a medical attention to an ailing friend of theirs who he was with. He was the only one that was with her at the time and knew what to do. He knew that she needed help. He knew that she was experiencing the signs of a stroke in the vehicle that they were in. They were in a parking lot where there was an urgent care center. And he saw the urgent care center, went inside, got the staff there, and got her attention. And the physician, when it was explained to them the importance of what he had done, made a difference in her outcome. She's still recovering from the stroke, but is doing well. So I knew that, saw that story, and being that he is a ninth grader, a rising 10th grader at Winter Park High School, and the family just returning here in February to live here in Winter Park from many years in Atlanta, I wanted to take this time before you, Mayor, and before the commission and our residents to recognize Curtis Cameron Walls with the Civilian Award of Merit from the fire department. So congratulations.
Just want to say I am glad to be back in Winter Park. This is home, and where I was born and raised. Went to Winter Park High School, graduated class of 81, and wanted my children to experience this environment. And we love Atlanta, but home is always home. And I thank God that Curtis was able to recognize and to get aid to Mrs. McLeod in order to help to save her life. And God is always in the blessing business, and I'm just grateful. So I thank God for his son who loves to help.
Thank you so much.
That concludes my presentation on an incredibly high note. Curtis, thank you, and I know you represent people that help other people, and I think that's incredibly what the spirit of Winter Park means, and thank you so much for that, and we're welcome the family back home. Mr. Knight? Anything under your report?
Just one quick item. Since our last meeting, George Wiggins celebrated his 40th year working for
really?
The city.
Isn't that exciting? Wow. Oh, there he is. And he's 35 years old. I don't know how he did that. But
he refused to let us honor him at the commission.
So you just went ahead and mentioned this. Yeah. So I know that... that our former tender of the cemetery had 40 years. But George, are you a record setter now? Are you the
Jimmy Carter?
Jimmy had
worked in the Central Park for many years. Called the mayor of Winter Park was 50 years.
50 years. So I believe that. So you must be and at this point one of the longest tenured current active employees. Well, we thank you for your service. I know our citizens do. Thank you so much. I think these types of anniversaries should be celebrated. It recognizes that especially in an era when people move around a lot, and that's okay too, but when somebody finds an organization that they work well with and you've worked well, it's great to have that happen. Mr. Knight, thank you.
Others? That concludes my report.
Questions of the city manager?
None, sir.
Mr. Brown, welcome back.
Thank you. Nothing to report.
Questions of Mr. Brown?
No, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm going to move then. What? I think we're going to talk about the May financial report, which is a kind of what, a two-thirds of the year report or so?
Yes, sir. That's right. Got two-thirds of the way through the fiscal year. And we'll start our discussion with the general fund, looking at their revenues. As we has been the case so far this year, construction activity has really brought in the building permit revenues, fire inspection fee revenues are both very high. Sales tax is continuing to be a strong revenue source for the city. We're projecting right now that our revenues will be about $721,000 to the good, and expenses appear to be in line with budget, so things are looking good there. Moving on to the water and sewer fund, our sales of water are down about a little over 5% from where we had forecast. This results in our revenues being about 3.7% below our estimate. We're continuing to watch that based on the spending. It doesn't look like adjustments are necessary at this point, and we are projecting debt service coverage to be just a little under 2x debt service. That's very good. Electric sales are about 3% of where we were last year. Our fuel costs are under-recovered for the 8 months into May 31 by about $230,000. We've increased fuel rates July 1 and maybe doing that again August 1. But we still have a good positive bottom line there, and our debt service coverage is projected to be just under 3x debt service for electric. So that's very good. We completed our refunding of a portion of the 2005A auction rate variable rate bonds last month. We had, at that point, we had $15,260,000 of variable rate bonds outstanding. $12,640,000 were tendered, and we set our purchase price at 97 cents on the dollar, and we were able to buy back $7,815,000 in bonds at 97 cents on the dollar. And that produced savings of $234,450. And this refinancing was accomplished with a bank loan from Pinnacle Public Finance at 2.74% for the entire term of the bond. And lastly, we Fitch Ratings did a surveillance update on our electric utilities credit, and they affirmed our rating at AA-. And that's the highlights.
Do they give a stable, or do they give
stable with a stable outlook?
I don't know what they. That's great news. I've got two questions, if I might. Wes, under your commentary, you talk about communication services taxes, and would you brief me and the commission on what that specifically is? And Randy, I don't know if it might be good to look at that line since the commentary says it's decreasing each year. I don't know if this is something that we ultimately need to lobby in Tallahassee for, or as people use cells, they don't use their home phone service.
And we are out lobbying in Tallahassee over this issue. They spend way more than all the cities combined in lobbying Tallahassee. And as they continue to bundle more and more items within your cell phone bill, less and less of it is taxable. And so we've been seeing this trend for well over a decade now of just continuing to erode that. So
what percentage of that, or what is the dollar value of that versus what I think of when I think of utility taxes, the taxes we charge on power and other things?
All right, the tax rate's 5.72%.
But of what? I mean, so 6.8 million is what this says the adjusted budget is. So the communication services is $1,500,000, $100,000.
Oh, I'm sorry. The communication services tax is about 2.4 million.
Okay, so that's a substantial part of that. That's as much as a third
yes.
of that.
And we projected a smaller amount for next fiscal year and in communication service tax revenue.
You know, 2.4 million is 5% of our overall, like you said, 5% of our overall budget in terms of our general fund today.
About that.
I mean, that's a pretty substantial number that if it's really going to eventually go away, we probably ought to start the planning for what we do to replace it.
Yeah, projecting that it's going to be lower doesn't help replace it.
Right. But it's, I mean, it's like I say, it's not going away, but less and less of what you're paying on is taxable each year's way. You know, used to you'd get your home bill and there'd be all this long distance on there, and now
right.
you'll pay
nobody pays for long distance.
So that's why we've seen the erosion.
I get it, but if just call it source A. Don't
right.
even call it what it is.
Sure.
Call it source A. Source A is declining as a source of revenue to the city, and source A, if it goes to zero, is 5% net revenue. So I don't know what we would take $2 million out of the budget if we were, if we had to do that. That would put a
that would be difficult.
Yeah. yeah. So
we have projected in our 10-year pro forma. A continued erosion. We certainly haven't projected.
And it may not go to zero. I mean, I'm not suggesting that it would, but I think that's important. The other thing, and I think both of our utilities are moving correctly, and I love the debt coverage ratio and all. I'm always intrigued when I compare, especially electric, to previous year, because it seems like the last couple months, is that just a timing thing? Is it the last quarter always seems to be a little bit better? Because based on what I see year to date, and I'm trying to read this, it shows we have a net income of $189,000 year to date in fiscal year 14. You're projecting that to end the year at $2.1 million. We finished last year at $2.8 million. Am I reading these correctly?
Yes.
So I guess my first question is, what's the difference between the $700,000 that we think we're going to end the year with? And then my next question is do we make it all up in the end, or how does it work from May till September 30?
Part of the answer is that the summer months are the strongest revenue months. That's when the heat's the highest, and we sell a lot more kilowatt hours then. So
do we know what last year's, and man, I didn't look at this, May 31st of 2013 was year-to-date for that year and how the $189,000 compared to?
I'm not sure how it compares. The $189,000 would be lower because I'm sure we did not spend as much in capital spending through May of last year. So it would the last year's would have been higher.
So let me just read the one line then, that this is income loss before operating transfers versus the net income line. So at 4.7 compared to 5.5 compared to 7.6 and 9.5, that's net capital costs or capital spending?
You're looking at income before operating transfers? I'm sorry,
yeah.
Which line?
Yeah, I'm looking at income before operating transfers. That number has... In 11, it was 9.5 million. In 12, it was 7.6 million. In 13, it was 5.5. And now it's projected to annualize out at 4.7. That's because the capital spending from sources other than bond proceeds have gone up each year?
That's the biggest difference I see. And just quickly taking a look at the statement.
So the 5.1 million we're going to spend this year in capital versus 3.8 versus 2.1 versus 1.6 is all undergrounding, or do you know?
Undergrounding would be a bit large piece of that.
I think it might be good to have just a what's the accounting term when you make a schedule? A schedule. Is that correct, Mr. Knight?
Sure.
I think it might be good to show the commission a schedule of that specifically and what we've spent the money on. I think
we can make that a separate line.
I don't know that it needs to be a separate line. I just like to know what we've gotten for 5.1 million versus last year at 3.8. So, you know, if you looked at income loss before operating transfers or our net income, it would look like we're trending down, and in reality, we're reinvesting back in the system. So, I don't want people to think that our utility is going down. We're just spending that money on infrastructure.
Yes, we can do that.
That answers my questions. Commissioner Sprinkle?
I heard from someone the other day that we were spending our electric money on other items and not using it for undergrounding. And that was news to me. I didn't realize what they were talking about. So I think if there's a way we could talk or speak to how much we're using each year on undergrounding, it would help us to be able to counteract that at times.
Yeah, and we spend. I mean, I still remember Jerry's presentation about the machines that go boom.
Yes.
So we got to replace the machines that go boom every once in a while. So I'm sure some of that's in that.
Yeah, we do have routine capital as well as the undergrounded capital. And the routine capital is that, for the most part, that unscheduled, whether it's a tree falls through a power line and you have to replace the whole span or, you know, replace a transformer, that type of thing, is part of that routine capital.
Wes, maybe that is a good idea. Maybe specifically break that capital spending out for what is undergrounding versus what might be replacement. I don't know if that would
sure.
be.
Sure.
I mean, I don't want to tell you what to do from an accounting standpoint, but that would probably help us as the management of it to really understand what we're getting there versus if something's needing to be replaced, et cetera. Jerry, the machine that went boom anyway was out of bond proceeds, wasn't it?
Yes, that was
what I thought.
Big transformer.
Yeah. Other questions of Mr. Hamill?
Is the plan dollars 3.5 for underground?
Yes.
Per year, and we're doing that, right?
Yes.
I thought we'd get that. Mm-hmm.
We're still on schedule based on what was discussed when we originally took over the utility on the underground schedule.
Yes.
Some people have asked to have it expedited, but
you're on schedule for that, and I think we're much better off, if memory serves me, than where we would be on the debt standpoint than when it first took over, too. Is that accurate to say in terms of payment back to the city? And
oh,
all?
Yes. We're way ahead on that.
Yes.
Yeah. Other questions, Mr. Hamill? Hearing none, it'd be appropriate, and I will move a motion that we accept the report as presented. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? We're going to go to the consent agenda. We'll pick up citizen comments near the 5 o'clock hour. Thank you, Mr. Hamill, Mr. Knight, all of the people that make that happen. We appreciate your stewardship. Consent agenda? I want to call the minutes out just slightly. I think on page 11 of the minutes, page 23 of our packet, one of the speakers spoke not in favor of the park versus they were all lumped together.
That's correct. Yes. I do believe
Julio.
That's correct.
Who was that?
So Julio DeArcos. I'm going to move the minutes as amended that Mr. DeArcos spoke against the motion. Is this a separate line item? With that change, I would move the minutes. Is there a second?
I'll second.
I'll open the floor for public comment if any citizens want to talk about the minutes with us. Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That passes with that modification. A consent agenda motion for the rest of the consent agenda.
I move that we accept the remaining items.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Further commission discussion? Hearing none, I'll open the floor for public comment. If any citizens wish to speak to us about this other two items that are on our consent agenda. Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. You already vote. I don't need to do that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you so much. That passes. Mr. Knight, I'm going to pass to you, or I don't know, to Mr. Hamill or Mr. Moore,
We're going to tag team these issues. Mr. Moore is going to come forward as we talk about the tentative millage rate. I don't think we have a slide on this, right? But the millage rate as proposed in your packet is 4.0923 for the general fund operating millage, and that is the same millage rate we've had now for 6 years. And then in addition to that, there's the debt service millage rate for the two voted debt service, one of which is the golf course bonds. That millage rate is 0.0965. And then there's the millage rate to service the public safety building bonds. And that millage rate is 0.2019. And those two are pretty much just a simple mathematical equation of the debt service required for 2015 divided by the assessed valuation of all the properties. The operating millage, the rules are is that you can go down from the tentative millage rate when you adopt the budget in September, but if you're going to go above the tentative millage rate, we have to do some extra advertising. Whatever you adopt here will be put out on the trim bill that goes out to the residents in August. And so you can go down from the tentative millage rate. It's difficult to go up. You've got to do an extraordinary advertisement. So just to lay that out there, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Questions of Mr. Knight?
Randy, I do have a question. Since we haven't had a workshop, I just want to make sure that you, as the city manager, are very comfortable that you are able to invest in the unseen infrastructure of Winter Park at an adequate level, that you are comfortable maintaining the millage rate for another year.
Yes, I am. Thank you for asking.
I'm not sure what the unseen infrastructure is.
Well, let me just say that I feel comfortable that the balanced budget I've provided meets the infrastructure needs for fiscal year 15 and the operating needs for fiscal year 15.
I have a question also.
Commissioner Sprinkle.
Would you remind me when our golf and our public safety building bonds are completed?
Yes, the golf course bonds are paid off in 2016, right, and the public safety bonds are paid off in 2021.
Thank you.
I'm going to move the tentative millage rate at the 4.0923 rate plus the two debt obligations which our citizens have voted on. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Commission discussion. Would you say that again? Golf was 16?
Yes, sir.
16.
And public safety?
2021.
2021. Thank you. Commission discussion about the tentative millage rate. I commend you, Mr. Knight, and the 500 staff that work for us. This is great work. I think we're blessed to have your leadership, and I'm always grateful that I'm the mayor of Winter Park, but I'm grateful I'm not the mayor of Orlando today to have to say that we're raising our rates. So we haven't passed it yet, but I think this is a positive statement to our citizens. So
thank you.
Mr. Moore, you're saying they're waiting for you're not making a presentation. You just want to, like, answer questions if there's any of these. Commission discussion on this matter? I'm going to open the floor for public comment then. Any citizens wish to speak to us about the Senate? The setting of the tentative millage rate. Thank you. I was tentative in my setting of the tentative millage rate. So I was tentative. I see no citizens wishing to jump up and say, please raise my millage rates. Please make them higher. Okay, I'll close the floor for public comment. Clerk, you all ready to vote? Clerk will read the roll on the setting of the tentative millage rate.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. We can go to the budget discussion now, or we can take up the public hearings, which I think will probably not take very long, and then we can go in and take as long as we want, till supper or till bedtime for the budget discussion. Is that fine?
Yes, sir.
So, Ms. Brown, we're going to take a simultaneous public hearing on the second reading of the two ordinances. If you would read into the record, Commission, remember, I will need two motions to be able to do that. Keep them both open, but we'll do a simultaneous public hearing on the request that's before us on second reading.
Yes,
Mr.
Sir.
Brown.
An ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending Chapter 58, Land Development Code, Article 1, Comprehensive Plan, Future Land Use Map, so as to change the future land use designation of office to commercial on the property at 1141 and 1143 Orange Avenue, more particularly described herein, providing for conflict severability and an effective date. And second ordinance. An ordinance amending Chapter 58, Land Development Code, Article 3, Zoning, and the official zoning map so as to change Office 01 District Zoning to Commercial C3 District Zoning on the property at 1141 and 1143 Orange Avenue, more particularly described herein, providing for conflict, severability, and an effective date.
Will the Commission on these two ordinances?
I'll move the first one.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you. Second ordinance? Move the commission. Thank you. Is there a second?
And I'll second.
Thank you.
I'd like to amend the second ordinance.
Okay.
In case you have an opportunity to think about this since our last meeting, I still would like to request that we consider the use of C3A zoning on this particular property due to the fact that it is directly across the street from single-family homes on Minnesota, the back of it. And while this property as a standalone property is not a problem, that we all know that over time things get consolidated. And I would hate to see I would hate to see it be a given and a precedent setting that all of the property on Orange Avenue should become C3. So my amendment would be that we allow commercial C3A as the zoning on this property.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Great. Other amendments? Okay, any further commission discussion on this matter?
No, sir.
I'm going to open the floor for public comment. Any citizens wish to speak to us about this matter? Seeing none, I'll close that. Any further commission discussion? Then I'll ask the clerk to read the roll. First, on the amendment to amending Article 1 Comprehensive Plan to change a future land use designation. Is that where your amendment was placed, Commissioner?
No, it was amended to the zoning, yes.
Okay. So then we'll just read the ordinance straight up on second reading. Clerk will read the roll on amending Article 1 Comprehensive Plan.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMacken?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. And now on the amendment to C3A as moved, clerk will read the roll on the amendment first.
Commissioner Leary?
No.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
No.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMacken?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
No. The amendment fails. Now on the ordinance as presented. Quick read the roll on the amendment. Pardon me, on the ordinance.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
No.
Commissioner McMacken?
No.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Okay. There's a resolution before you, Ms. Brand. If you could read that into the record, I would appreciate it, please.
Yes, sir.
A resolution of the City of Winter Park indicating its support for the continued use and management of the Lake Baldwin Veterans Administration Medical Clinic by the VA.
I'm pretty close to this one because I see a lot of the patients that come from the VA. The new VA hospital and clinics which are being built to our south will be a wonderful addition to Central Florida, but based on the VA's own assessments, it's already undersized. There are active facilities at the Baldwin Park location, in many cases that are, I don't know, just a few years old. I want to say less than 20 years old, maybe even less than 10. If you walk through it, they're beautiful, and to see them either be torn down or used for something else where the VA, I think, could use this to continue to serve our veterans would be a wonderful thing. And that's what this resolution does. It also, I think, directly impacts the veterans of Winter Park specifically, because many of them enjoy, and many of them I think have actually frankly moved to our community because that VA place is so close to us that if we moved it another, I don't know if it's 15 miles or so further south, that could present a hardship.
I make that drive, not for that purpose,
so
but it's a good half
it,
hour.
It could present a hardship, and with tolls it could be more than that.
Yeah.
So. This resolution obviously would be non-binding on the federal government, but I think it would indicate our support to continue to use the facility for VA purposes. I'm going to move that resolution. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I know Congressman Mike is behind this action. Not the
very
action
much
that
so.
We're taking, but the action of keeping the VA clinic.
And he's
here.
Been very active, obviously, in the expansion of the VA, the new facilities that are down there, as well as maintaining this one.
And I just for my own... the history on this one, is this in conjunction with anything that he is doing specifically? Is this directed to someone?
Yes, I think the actual,
his
request, as I understand the process, Tom, and I maybe Mr. Knight knows the clarity around it, but as I understand the process, it actually is the Veterans Administration Secretary's decision at the end of the day, is how I understand the process. So our resolution goes to that individual. Obviously, members of Congress influence that individual. But I think they at least initially make the decision whether it should be closed or not.
Okay.
So I don't know if they fund it and do all that from there. I'm not as familiar with the federal process probably. But at this point, the resolution, and it is to our Secretary of the Veterans Administration to request that it remain open, is the correct party to send the resolution to.
Okay.
Commissioner Cooper.
Yeah. Thank you.
Randy, that was my question too. There's nothing in our packet that helps us understand the origin of the resolution, or in my personal situation, I would like to be very clear that there is nothing that I'm doing here that might take away from the VA center at Lake Nona. And I don't think it does, but I sure would like to hear that.
It's certainly our understanding that it does not.
Okay. So we're not sharing funds. Right. There's not something that's not going to go to support Lake Nona if we put, because I have lots of friends that have been here, and I sing Christmas carols every year there, and it's certainly a wonderful asset for our community. But on the other hand, I don't know if there are unintended consequences since there's no information that explains where it came from and why.
Right. I certainly can't speak with how the federal government ultimately puts together its budget, so to whether this would take money from somewhere else or they just print more. But
there's no ongoing competition
that's right now
that I'm not aware of.
That's correct. And this was in conversations I've had with Congressman Micah, you know, on this issue. He said, if the city supports this concept, please let us know. And so that's the purpose of the
resolution. I think we do. And I think we do.
To help support that concept.
Okay. Thank you.
Further commission discussion?
I'll open the floor for public comment if any citizens wish to weigh in on this matter. Seeing none, I'll close the floor for public comment. I think this request is important. It's important to the citizens of Winter Park, and that's why I'm going to support this ordinance or resolution. Any further commission discussion? I'll ask the clerk to read the roll on the resolution.
Commissioner Leary?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMacken?
Yes.
Mayor Bradley?
Yes. Let's go up and pick up item 11B, which we split out as a budget discussion. Mr. Knight, this is not meant for public input at this point. This is a discussion with the commission, so I want to clear those ground rules at the outset.
Right.
We'll obviously have plenty of time for public input on this going forward.
Right.
I know you and Peter, I think, have a presentation.
Yes, sir. We have three specific items we want to talk to you about. We're certainly open to talk about any part of the budget if you so choose. The three items we want to talk about, one is the Enterprise Resource Program software, which is a capital project in the proposed budget. The second item is organizational support and how I've proposed to handle that a little bit differently this year. And then the third item is the tree budget that's in the proposed budget, kind of gets into what Mayor Terranova was asking about and how we're going to deal with the tree replacements and all of that type of thing. So those are the three items.
Is this in the agenda packet someplace?
It was not. I mean, it was in the proposed budget. But
so the public doesn't understand that we're getting ready to talk about this. I mean, if they were interested, they wouldn't know necessarily that they should be here to talk about.
They're not speaking to it.
At the last meeting, when I asked for this item, I said these are the three items I wanted to talk about.
Right, so that was notified.
I did say that publicly. But it was not in the agenda as we've...
Right, there was
the PowerPoint
thing in
the
packet.
Not in the agenda, right. Certainly in the proposed budget. All the information here, so... Well, not all of it. Some of it's more educational here. If that's okay, Mr. Mayor, we'll proceed in that order. And if we don't have to get through all these today, we've gone in...
Supper's a-coming, so go ahead. Let's try.
It's an early day. It's a good day.
So I'm going to let Peter handle the first part. Do we have the PowerPoint working?
Yes, we should be working. If we have some issues on your screens, we printed some hard copies.
If you have a hard copy, I'll give you, okay. Just in case you want to take it home and study.
Well, and my laptop's telling me it's going to auto-restart in 4 minutes and 42 seconds for some reason.
Well,
I can't stop it. So we'll fire through this as quickly as we can. It's on the other side. Go into the folder budget and go to the PowerPoint presentation, the most recent one. You can grab it there. I'll go ahead and go as far as we can on the laptop. If we have to switch back to the other computer, we'll do that. Really, we wanted to introduce this concept first to you guys of our enterprise resource system. Let's see if I can get this to work. There we go. In 1988, we purchased the SunGuard system, which is sort of the backbone of our computer operations. And just to kind of get an idea of what else was going on in 1988, we wanted a little perspective on this issue. So, believe it or not, didn't have to bribe anyone to get that photo. He offered it up willingly, but this gentleman would one day become the city manager of quite the exceptional city. Michelle Duvalier, our assistant city manager, was getting ready for prom.
Was she in the eighth grade at that point?
That's prom.
That's fantastic. I love it. Wes, we all voted. You haven't changed a bit, and we're a little ticked. And then Dory, as she pointed out in an internal staff meeting, Peter was 10 when we got this system. That's 10-year-old Peter in his backyard practicing his future in culinary arts. So technology has obviously changed, too. Look, there's a guy happy on his cell phone with no cord. Look, Mom, that's pretty cool. The Tandy computer, Radio Shack's computer, I don't know if you remember that laptop, that's pretty awesome. That was considered high fashion. Love the pants. Ronald Reagan, you're a president. We miss you, dude. And if you don't remember, Germany was two countries. So a lot has changed since 1988. In all seriousness, by way of background, we set up the IT Governance Council a couple years ago, and we have, I think, most of those members here. It's made up of, in many cases, department or division heads throughout pretty much all facets of the city. If you're on the ITGC, would you wave your hand in the air so everyone can know?
Thank you.
There we go. Thank you. And also through our strategic planning process, we began to discover that perhaps we had some concerns we wanted to address with our core operating system of the city. So our fire chief, Jim White, and our assistant director of finance, Karen Cockerham, formed a working group to interview the 12 various major stakeholders that are involved in using the system to kind of see what are our needs and then what are the things that you're finding that are troubling you. Some of those core items that came back as a concern.
So before you do that, could you define what this software does? I follow that it's probably in need of repair or replacement, but tell us what the software is, please.
Sure.
What does it do? Does it build? Does it
keep
Randy's schedule? I don't know what it does.
It's pretty much everything. Pretty much everything we do is stored in at least the data side into the HT system automatically. So utility billing, all the bill payments and processing, all that is handled. Accounts receivable, accounts payable, all those finance activities. Building and permitting is handled through it.
General ledger, payroll.
Community development, budget, yep, all that good stuff.
Building permits, you say that already?
Yeah, building permits, yeah.
So purchasing?
Purchasing, yep. Purchasing is all handled through it.
911?
That's a good point. Jerry raised customer service, that's all handled through that
911
system.
911 is not.
And what through public safety? What does public safety do?
Just as I believe that's ticketing, right? Parking tickets? Yeah.
Okay.
And it's off-the-shelf software, or was it?
Yes.
Literally.
It was
out of the cave, actually.
Well, back then, it was state-of-the-art. It was state-of-the-art, and when I came here in 89, they were still in the process of migrating to this new software. So I spent my first year and a half, 2 years, migrating into this software, the different components. So, as he said, it's pretty much everything administrative that we do that is automated is through this system or attached to this system.
Some of the major drawbacks, not compatible with modern software systems, Windows, Office Suite, Excel, you can't export any of those items natively. Doesn't operate with an open architecture. Obviously, we've started to cobble together third-party softwares to kind of deliver the level of service people expect. The concern that we end up with is those don't always communicate well, so we end up in a batching scenario, which is where at the end of the day we dump all of our data into the system to get up to date, so we don't have a real-time situation. Can't integrate natively with GIS. It's not designed for mobile use, and that operations are mostly manual with limited automated workflow capability, so there's an inability to be able to program kind of a process into the system that it would take care of for itself. One of the larger complaints that we got back is it's not user-friendly. You know, obviously one of the issues that we're dealing with is data extraction. So I've joked that in order to give you a nice budget column all lined up, I would have to go into the system, and since it's only really designed for printing, there goes my computer, I apologize, since it's really only designed for printing, since email and electronic documents weren't too prevalent back in 1988, we have to go in, grab it out of the back end, drag it as a text file, I drop it into Excel, we do text to columns, you clean out all the clutter, and there you have your accounts lined up. But then, of course, if you go into the system and change one item, it's now out of date and you can't update it automatically. So there's obviously some concerns with that. And then certainly this makes training difficult. The workforce coming in today is not used to software like this. I'm already getting old when it comes to software use. I don't even know what's going on in the application world and the mobile technology. So this stuff is changing very, very rapidly. But when you get a piece of software today, you expect to be able to sit down and look at it and figure it out by kind of point and clicking. Like when I get Windows 8 on my computer, I don't call up Microsoft to ask them, how do I use this software going forward? Thank you. And of course, what this leads to is a gradual loss of institutional knowledge. As employees who have worked with the system for a long time leave the city, we're losing people that have that extensive knowledge. And one of the failures that we have acknowledged in the paper that was put together is that we have not done a good job of transferring that knowledge on. But I would also say in the same breath, the technology heads that we have in the current software has not kept up with modern world. Could you click next slide, please? Is it going or no? Thank you. So we asked one of the leading companies to come in and kind of give us a brief dog and pony show to say, you know, we don't really know what we need because we're so out of date with what's around. We want to kind of understand what's going on in this market. Certainly, one of the things we could do would be to replace the 15-plus software solutions that we currently add on to our SunGuard systems that we could operate what we've got. If you talk to IT, they really don't want to be managing all those additional software programs. We really want to look at an integrated solution that handles all of our needs. And then certainly there's some functionality that hasn't been easily implementable. A number of things that we've talked about before. Building and permitting has come up as an issue. Online issues, dashboards, benchmarking, asset tracking, electronic dispatch. We have over 100 work orders a day going out to do water service and utility billing. Right now that's done on paper because it's the only way we can do it. We can't track that electronically. So we don't know once we've handed out that paper where our guys are, when they're done with stuff, until they've come back to the office and they get internet back in. So you've got data entry, manual entry errors, and you've got an inability to kind of track real time. So this, we're looking at some speed improvements there as well.
And if you recall, this past year we implemented an online bill pay thing. We kept getting asked, when is this going to happen? We kept saying next month. It took us well over a year to get that implemented. Because of the integration, we had to have somebody write a program to integrate with our software. So it's that type of thing that's already in these new systems that we have to make happen a different way.
Sure. Bruce, next slide, please. Thank you. Training, obviously, would be easier with a newer system. We bring in new employees. Some of the intuitive nature of more modern software would be easier to understand. And then probably most importantly, there's some customer improvements that come with more modern software. So the user interface is much cleaner. It's easier to understand. It's more modern. And certainly, it reduces wait times. I went in as just an example and asked our utility billing group, what do we have to do when someone comes in and wants to set up a new account? Let's say there's a new person in the city and they say, set me up. I want water. I want electric. I want garbage. I want all that good stuff. What do our people have to do on the phone or in person to get somebody set up? Bruce, you might hit it once and then hit it one more time. These are the screenshots that utility billing gave me that their people go through to set up a new account. I had this at a 0.5 second delay in between, but it took a little too long. So I figured it got the point across going that way. They also added that this did not include setting up the customer for email, also did not include going into third-party software to set up any of that as well. So it takes a little while.
We get rid of a whole department.
So based on the...
The more software you buy, the more people you add.
Based on those findings, the ITGC voted on the following. Voted that SunGuard has served the city well. I mean, it has been a very extensive suite of software. As Randy said back in 1988, this was really the stuff. I think where they probably have fallen behind is in the continual updates that we've been able to push through. And that it's time that we look for something different. Any new system should be a unified suite. We want to get away from this cobbling together of multiple software programs. And then just getting back to the training issue, that anything we do implement, we're going to have a great opportunity to have everybody on a level playing field internally. Everyone will understand how to use it. But what do we do when the first employee leaves and we get a new one? How are we making sure that we're continuing to pass that knowledge and that software on to future employees as they come on board? Here's some examples of some local governments that are undergoing conversion. These are just folks in Florida that have moved from our specific type of software to something else in the last 7 years. There are more. These were just some of the ones we grabbed. I know Altamont's in the middle of implementation right now. And so is Newport Richey, I believe. I did put them there. So really what we are asking you all is we did put this in the budget. We put it into the CIP. It is fully funded in that CIP. This is quite a long process. The folks that we've talked to have said this could be a 2 to 3 year implementation. They have guaranteed we will all be very angry at each other internally by the time this is all over, but that many cities are doing this and that it's an important change to make. Right now, we have been drafting internally an RFP to kind of send out to the market to see who are the major vendors that would possibly be interested in offering something to us. We'd like to bring them in, kind of do with shortlisting the ones we think are the best, bring them in for a 2-day dog and pony show where we're going to bring every single division and department through and they're going to get to see how does the software meet your needs. And at the end of that, we have a subset of the IT Governance Council that's going to make a recommendation on a software based on the feedback that we get from all of those departments. So we're hoping to be able to move through that fairly quickly. I think, are we looking at about 2 to 3 months maybe? I think we're still a little out on that. But we're basically looking for the nod that we can continue to go ahead on this process and continue to come back to you with more information as we get it.
So Randy, would you craft for the commission what decisions we might have to make?
The only decision,
and when that might be?
There's the first decision is to put phase one in the capital budget.
We don't know. We're not going to vote that specifically. When we vote the budget, we'll vote that, or is it a specific decision?
That's correct. It's part of the budget I gave. So when you vote the budget, you'll be voting for it. I wanted to highlight this item, one, because it's a big number, and two, because it hasn't been in the five-year plan. It's kind of been one of those things that staff has gotten more and more frustrated with the challenges that the current software provides, and we've now seen what we think are some real good solutions to the problem, you know, but it hasn't been in the five-year capital plan, so it's kind of jumped in into it. So that's why I wanted to highlight it.
So what is the total estimated, and I know the software costs are one thing, but then the costs to train people and the implementation integration costs are probably twice that again. Yeah. What is the magnitude by which we think this is?
We believe this is a $2 million expenditure over 3 years, spread over 3 years. And it touches all funds. So some of it will come out of water and sewer, some will come out of electric, some will come out of the building department, and then certainly the general fund and stormwater fund. So
that's helpful.
So phase one this year in the budget is
$860,000.
And you'll take advantage, I hope, of the League of Cities, which we were, because I know they have a lot of input. I mean, they have a lot of people who are making that transition.
A lot of folks are in this process right now.
Let me finish answering the mayor's question. So then, once we go out to bid, there will be a recommendation of the city commission to select an actual package.
So that would probably happen in the 2014-15 budget season, or
it would happen at the end of this fiscal year. Do we think we'll be that? So somewhere towards the end of September.
Sometime toward the end of September,
we'll
be recommending that we proceed to negotiations with XYZ software or whatever.
And we believe the $2 million is an upper end. We hope to come in and can value engineer it, come in at a lesser cost than that. But it's going to be somewhere in that ballpark if we want to get the whole package.
Including, are you setting aside within that maintenance of the system? I mean, that those maintenance contracts.
There are ongoing maintenance contracts. Of course, we have ongoing maintenance contracts for their existing one, too.
Yes, so I understand.
And we have the 15 different softwares we're paying for. We do believe the ongoing maintenance will cost us a little bit more than we're paying today, and that is factored into the 10-year pro forma.
And have you done any analysis to say what kind of cost is going to save you?
Well, it's difficult without knowing our specific vendor. I mean, we've only had that one group come in and talk to us, and so I think we have some concepts of where we could get some serious productivity back, but we haven't done any kind of actual numbers analysis. I think that's part of what we want to do by getting farther in this process. When we actually know our vendor and know what modules we're getting for every department and what we're doing, we'll have a better idea of how that can help.
You don't need my counsel because I'm certainly not tech savvy in this regard. But I read a lot about we owning it versus cloud-based versus, what's the word when somebody else manages the software, host it, that's the correct word. I'm assuming that whoever's helping us from IT will check those things out.
Yes, absolutely.
Because those are ways to keep up with the most latest. And
well, it's not just owning the system, it's not just owning the software, it's owning the data, too, the information, and the transfer of information, the security of the information that's transferred. So, I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves here, but I think there's concern, especially given the sensitivity the information that's going to be shared, just how we go about
it. Very good points.
Yeah, and you'll be working on safety and all that, obviously. When I say safety, as Commissioner Larry said.
Security
safety. Any other questions of staff about this matter? So that's a preview of what's coming before us.
Yes, sir.
Great. Well, 1988 to the present is how many years?
About
26?
26
years? That's a lot of years for. I haven't
upgrades.
Had a cell phone.
There were upgrades.
The same cell phone.
Of course.
But that's great.
Have right?
Okay, next item, Mr. Moore. I don't think there were any questions specifically about that, but we appreciate the update. That's very, very, very helpful.
The next item is organizational support. You know, we spend a lot of time on this issue every year. It's very important. And I know there's. We had some discussions and a presentation from the Downtown Performing Arts Center, and I got feedback from several commissioners that this is something I'd like to participate in. And so I was looking for some opportunities to increase the amount we have available for organizational support. And what I proposed within this budget, and I got a little clicker and everything. What I proposed, It's off our screens here.
We've got the...
You get the hard copy, right. Well, what I've proposed is that we set a baseline within the budget from year to year. Obviously, any commission, any year can change it, but it would be a quarter of a percent of the gross revenues of the three major funds would be our pot of money available for organizational support. So that's the three major funds being the general fund, the electric utility, and the water and sewer fund. And just as I know there were none of you on the commission 10 years ago when we acquired the electric utility, but one of the campaign discussions we often had was that the previous utility spent a lot of money supporting local organizations, and the commission said, well, we'll do the same thing when we own the electric utility. And we're now in the position where the electric utility can participate at a small level like this. So what I propose in the budget, 0.25% from each of those funds, and that generates $294,500 for 2015. And then we have requests here listed there. We have the $85,000 of operating funds requested for Mead Gardens. Now, this is in addition to the $100,000 capital for Mead is still over the capital budget and would not be coming out of this $294,000. The Historical Society is the same level as last year, requested $70,000. The United Arts asked for $17,000. They were at $15,000 in fiscal year 14. The Winter Park Day Nursery was not funded last year. We do fund the Welburn Day Nursery but out of the CRA, but the Winter Park Day Nursery was not funded, but they put in a request for $24,000. The Winter Park Playhouse has asked for $30,000 in operating and $1 million in capital, and then the Performing Arts Center.
And they currently have...
I'm sorry.
And where are they currently? Oh, they have zero?
They have zero. I should have said that. Thank you. And then the Performing Arts Center made a request for $1 million and $100,000 each year for 10 years. So that's what our requests are. That adds up to about $330,000. So it's more than the $294,000 that my proposal provides. Certainly the commission can allocate that however you wish. I've made some recommendations here. I've recommended keeping Mead Gardens and the Historical Society and United Arts at their existing levels, 85, 70, and 15 respectively. I've recommended putting the day nursery in this first year at $7,000, which is the same amount that we fund the Welburn Day Nursery. And then I've recommended the Playhouse at $17,500 this first year, and the Performing Arts Center the first year at $100,000. And again, that's a 10-year commitment. So that adds up the $294,500. I do want to point out that the Mead Gardens in the fourth year of the five-year commitment the commission made. So presumably, if after next year, you know, we're no longer supporting them, that would free up more money for the day nursery and the playhouse if the commission wants to be funding those at a higher level. So those are just my recommendations. Certainly be open to discussing how the commission wants to do that. And we can discuss it now, or we'll move on to the next topic, which is trees.
I have a question or two.
Commissioner Cooper?
I just wanted to make sure that I understand how many of these have dollars also in the capital improvement budget?
Only Mead is funded in the capital, and that's at the $100,000 level. We also had a five-year commitment of $100,000 each year there.
Okay.
I don't believe any of these others have a capital. Well, I mentioned Winter Park Playhouse has $1 million request. I did not fund any of that capital in the capital budget.
The reason
that one's in our capital budget is because that's our asset out there, whereas none of these others would be our asset if we gave them money for capital.
Okay. And the $400,000 grant for the Clearwater project?
Yes.
Is that?
That's also
another
in the capital
project. So it's $400,000 plus $100,000 plus $85,000 going
that's
to the gardens.
That's correct.
And And, but they're the only one in that situation?
Yes.
Of all these. Okay. And things like the library and the chamber and links, or do those things go somewhere else?
The library is funded. I did not include that in this funding. The library is funded, fully funded at their request, which was about a 3% increase or over the prior year. So that's fully funded at the request. We do not give cash to the chamber. We do fund the in the CRA, Heritage Center, but that's an operating grant. They're operating it on our behalf. So I see it as a little bit different. Is there any others that get funded out of the CRA? The popcorn flicks are paid for out of the CRA. That goes to the NZION.
And links, I've been approached numerous times saying we don't contribute to links, and I know how important it is to have Sunrail be successful, and I don't know how Sunrail can be successful without links. So I'm just not sure if that's something we need to consider and what the background is and why we don't versus if we should.
The links discussion is a much bigger discussion. Their contract ends when, Randy, do you know?
Their contract with whom?
Their contract with the city of Orlando or Orange County.
I don't know. I don't know. But to give you the history.
I think it's a discussion we need to have.
There have been, the history for Winter Park is we have rarely contributed to links. There have been years when we eliminated the minibus system back in, Jeff's here, back in the early 90s or mid-90s, we paid links $50,000 a year to keep to extend a route into the Plymouth, and then over time that discontinued that funding.
We talked about transfers in and out of the Sunrail station through links and other partners last budget season, and I think the discussion at the time ended up, let's see where it goes rather than plan the path right now that we may right. Spend money in the wrong area. Let's see what the need is and then possibly revisit it. We haven't heard anything.
Yeah, I have met with links twice about circulators in Winter Park, and they've promised us a proposal to if that's something we'd like to consider.
Right.
And we do have major employers that have
maybe could contribute.
They could contribute to that, and so it's something we're looking at. I don't have it in the proposed budget.
Have they made a request?
Links has not made a request, a formal request, to my knowledge, Wes or Peter.
We have all the formal requests right here.
Yes.
Yes, Commissioner Laird. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so right now, are you recommending that as a part of this that we, for this year and perhaps for moving forward, we look at 25% of the revenues and making that the formula that we use until maybe down the road we decide to change it? So is that part of this recommendation?
That is part of my recommendation. Okay. But I want to be clear, it's
0.25%. I see that. I'm sorry. But in doing that, those are the only three funds that we can use.
That's just what I'm recommending.
Okay.
In the past, all this has been done out of the general fund only, so the water and sewer and electric haven't contributed towards that. So this is a new funding proposal.
Well, I like the formula, and I like the way you've done it. I just wish we could get another $10,000 or $20,000 if there was one more fund, and I don't know that there is one that we could come up with a little more organizational support funding. But I like the fact that you've come up with a formula. It helps us to know what we're working with in the future, and it gives us a lot more money than we've had in the past to do this with. So, thank you.
I like the fact that it's a definite amount so that we have an amount to work with. I'm still needing criteria for how we distribute and approve organizations that share in that amount. And then I guess to Sarah's point, if it was 0.26% instead of 25, we wouldn't be left with the shortfall that you have given the commission to deal with. I mean, what I see here is a total that adds up to about $36,000 short. Mm-hmm. And so that creates, of course, always challenge. So maybe that number should be 0.26% as opposed to 0.25%. I don't know why you would want to hand the commission a challenge like that, that's going to be difficult for the community if it's not necessary. That would be my thought.
Well, other commissions obviously deal with many requests that are far and away past.
And we probably will too.
Yeah, I mean, once we start spending this, just wait.
That's
the requests
right.
are going to be a whole lot more than a few thousand.
Of course they will.
Mr. Knight, and I'm not familiar, are all of these not-for-profit organizations?
Yes, they are.
Does that include the Playhouse?
Mm-hmm. I believe that they are, right?
Yes, they are.
And the Meat Gardens, I thought that we had made a commitment out of parks, that instead of spending money out of parks, we would have spent to run the park, we gave that.
No, we still.
Because this to me, I mean, what we do to Meat Gardens, we'd be doing in Meat Gardens if we didn't have somebody else doing it for us,
right.
is what I'm saying. So that to me is totally different than you know, what we may do for United Arts, the Day Nursery, the Playhouse. Those are things that we may not be in the business of, being in the business of a playhouse or a day nursery.
You're absolutely
if our city didn't do that, but Meat Gardens is ours. I mean, it's.
You're absolutely correct. They're doing a service that we don't have to pay to do. Now we were not doing it at that level. We were maintaining the park, and we're still maintaining the park from a mowing and all of that outside of these numbers.
Of course.
But what they're doing is taking it to another level. They're doing, you know, they're improving the education aspect and many other things out there that are different than just having a passive open park.
So there were, I mean, but there also was going to be additional revenues and all, so.
That's right.
I mean, I'm assuming that any organizations that's going to request money of us will be open to open up their books to show
right.
what percentage of their revenue comes from the city and
that's correct.
What percentage comes from other things. And is there, I mean,
We
were very intentional around Meat Gardens. I don't know that we've been this intentional around other requesters. So.
I think we have, unless, Randy, is there something new? I know in the past you did.
We do. We get that. We get their financials. We get their, you know, what they're planning on spending the money on and all of that. And staff works through those details with each of these entities.
So will 0.26% cover what's been requested of us if we're comfortable with it? What does it take, Peter? What is that?
I think it's going to take another 500, so I'd have to do the calculation.
I like the 0.25, it's a nice, easy number,
yeah.
And next year it'll have to be 0.27.
You will always have more.
Always be more than
of course.
You always have more than you can
afford. Yeah, so I
just hate
Randy.
To start off. But do you have a criteria that you have put together for how you are evaluating these different requests?
I haven't put together criteria of how the commission's going to allocate the between these groups.
But you could.
Randy, I still struggle with why yes and why no. I mean, that's still a major concern.
That's what I mean, the criteria.
Yeah, like, I don't understand how we can tell people no to you, but we're going to increase somebody next year. And I know you face this, and you face this every year. You've been sitting in that seat with that mustache on. So I'm not sure how we end up there. I'm not sure how we end, you know, is 0.25 good? Is 0.26 better? Is 0.23? I mean, it's all this random.
It's random. It's or arbitrary, I'd probably force them
right. That's fair.
And
are there any others that have applied that you have not brought forward?
Not in this. In the past, we kind of had a policy that we weren't taking new ask.
Right.
We were only going to fund the ones that we funded in the past. So this opens up some funding for the day nursery and the playhouse that we weren't funding at all in the past. You know, yes, you're telling them they can't have their entire request, but they're getting money they didn't get it all last year. So,
well, I think for a lot of these organizations, the consistency thing is what they're looking for. For most nonprofits, it's a continuity challenge. Losing, and I think this is where the mayor was going too. If we're 70%, 20%, 30%, I mean, anything over 10% of somebody's annual funding,
it's a pretty big nut to lose on a whim the following year. So I'm not sure how we get there. I'm not sure if we send a signal out that just says, if you hit this criteria, we'll consider you. Here's our pot, and here's where we go, where we're not considering anybody from here on out. I'm just telling you, me personally, it's a struggle. I'd love to help all these organizations. They're all great, but I just don't know how to do it. So I know that's actually no help to you whatsoever, but I want to let you know that's kind of my area of struggle with this.
Well, I'm going to go for more for the Winter Park Day Nursery, as you know already. So that's where I would try to put more money in, because I think their request, we're only giving them a third of what they requested, and I'd like to see more money go in there. I know that means I have to tell you where I want to take it away from, and that's where I get into trouble also. So I understand that. So,
Mr. Knight, I've had a burden for quite a while that we, as a city, take a convening role in what I will call our arts of our community, such as the different museums, et cetera. And I'm not advocating that we fund that at this point, but if we were to do something like that, you know, Palaszczuk, the Historical Society, the Tiffany Museum, Cornell, I mean, these are major sources of both visitors to our community as well as a lot of our panache, if I could say that. They'd be the envy of any community out there. And today they all seem to kind of, it feels like they work together. Obviously they don't work in opposition, but there isn't kind of an overall Winter Park Arts group or whatever you'd want to say. United Arts kind of does that, but I don't know, with this funding, United Arts also spends a lot of resources on education for our children, which I think is good in terms of the arts, and certainly as a Winter Park citizen and a resident, we would want our children to be to grow up understanding and appreciate that. I don't know, so I guess this is a great shot and a great way to start by looking at that. I'm troubled by some of the groups on the list. I'm troubled by some of the funding amounts, and I'm also troubled that if our citizens said, would you like $300,000 back, or would you like us to give money to these groups, what they'd say about that. And so, yeah, if it's, oh, let's give money to the day nursery versus somebody else, but if it was, or undergrounding, or if it was something else, I don't know what they'd say. I mean, other organizations have been through a very cyclical nature. When I say that, other government organizations have been through a very cyclical nature from what they support. Homelessness in our society is an issue. We haven't addressed that anywhere. Is that something that we should be funding to support? I don't know. I mean, are there other nurseries in our city that are not-for-profit that we just don't know about? I don't know. I mean, those are to me, that are questions that I have. I'm, these are all very worthy groups, and I contributed to many of them privately. So I like your approach. I like that you've put a kind of a straw man out there for us to react to, because up until this point, we haven't even had that. So this is a good step to craft what ultimately is public policy. So I commend you. I wouldn't vote for it tonight.
Okay. Any other comments on that, or we move on to trees, our other favorite charity?
The other thing that bothers me is that if people don't know to go and apply, they don't get and so I know that's an issue.
Well, and we don't advertise,
right.
Please come ask, because we
right.
have so little funds to
right.
to spread around that it just makes our job even harder each year. So we haven't advertised, and you say, Mr. Mayor, that it's cyclical.
I'm talking about the county's been here with big bucks and less bucks. City of Orlando, they've had boards that have translated. That's what I meant.
Yeah, about 7 or 8 years ago, the commission made the decision to stop giving to the museums, and that's when we added the United Arts back. We had quit giving to the United Arts, and they said, well, if we just give it to United Arts, they spend way more money back to those museums than we could ever contribute. And so that's why those came out. But we have in the past contributed to the Palaszczuk, for example, on specific issues, like they had some trees that needed to be removed and or something like that.
And we just gave a sewer project move or whatever.
Right.
And Randy, my request wouldn't be to contribute specifically to those. What I think is missing today is an overall community organization or board or, you know, I'm thinking out loud, but I'm prepared at some point to suggest that we have, just like we have a parks board and a Keep Winter Park Beautiful board, that we have a cultural board that has ex officio members from our community that serve in those capacities and at least have a forum to talk about those things. So,
and Mr. Mayor, to that point, I think you can also add there are other organizations that are not necessarily on this list but do get support from the city, whether it's a land trust, whether it's Castle Police is on land that the city owns, the Historic Society is in a land in a building that the city owns. So there's other pieces and parts to it too that we contribute back into the community, have that for community. In the last meeting, we just donated land to that. There's constant giving from the dais here to try to increase and help programs throughout the city, not just annually through the budget.
It might be interesting to even really. And you rattled off a good list there, but to even quantify all that, I don't know if that could all be quantified. That would be, you know, it's not police, fire, and parks. It's
right.
It's something additional that our citizens, I think, demand of us and expect of us.
It would be nice if they understood how we work across the organizations, because we do. We do give a lot through land with the CASA, through land and building maintenance with the chamber. I mean, we do a lot of things for the community that I think would be nice if we could talk about. It would be a positive thing.
The other thing I'd like to see is how this relates back to people in Winter Park. Like, I know the Mead Garden served 270 plus kids this summer in their Mead Garden summer program. So you put a number to it, how many kids were served or what ages were served or whatever. I think as we start, you know, finalizing this even more, if we can have even better data. But I love the idea of having a board that would deal with this also, so it's not just us up here trying to determine.
Many municipalities have done that. They've either given an allocation to an elected member and say, you split it up whatever way you want to, and then you have to face that, or they have a board that recognizes that. So. Further commission discussion on this matter?
No, sir.
No, but it's a blessing that we have the resources to even be discussing the possibility of what we can do with this.
It is, but it's a challenge because
it's very difficult.
That not just do we allocate it, but is this what our citizens want us to be in the business of doing?
And, so, you know, we could include that discussion as part of our vision. But we are getting ready to do visioning, too, and we could include that as part of the discussion. What things they support in the. We've done that before with resident surveys that have been helpful.
Ms. Moore, are you taking up the next item, or is that Ms. Del Valle and Mr. Knight?
It's Drew. Jill and Drew are going to come.
Good afternoon. Drew and I are going to break it up a little. I'm going to do the financial piece, and she's going to do the technical tree piece.
So let's be clear. This is ultimately a budget conversation.
Yes.
So the technical tree piece, I know we have to understand. But are you asking us for any changes in the urban forestry plan, which we've adopted, or not to do that?
No.
Okay.
We're making some recommendations that go along with the practices that we've established in the budget. Just making you aware tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, so the last time we were together, we talked about the urban forest management plan pretty thoroughly, and the one remaining piece was that we were having some additional inventory done. So since then, we've had that additional inventory done, and Drew's going to speak to you about that, as well as we want to let you know that we received the highest grant this year, which is $20,000. So we received even more this year in grant money than we did last year. So going forward, we'll be able to inventory an even greater number of trees as we move into the plan. So Drew's going to tell you a little about what we found in our inventory.
Sorry, can I ask, the grant money, where did the grant money come from?
The state urban and community forestry grant. So it was the same contractor that we had, the same consultant that did the original 300. It was Mr. Libby. So he used the same criteria that he used before. The difference is that you know, last year, and according to the original survey that was done back in 2005, right after the hurricanes, we actually have a higher percentage of laurel oaks than what we thought, which is really not a good thing. And I think the discrepancy in Mr. Lippe's survey versus ArborPro's survey is the fact that he's a local arborist, and a lot of the folks that were doing the original survey were from out of state, and so the oaks are very difficult. So there's a section in there that said laurel oaks, live oaks, other oaks. So a lot of those laurel oaks actually got put into the other oak category. So that's part of the scenario. But all the criteria, you know, are the same.
Are these the 300 trees inventoried in 2013, were those just right-of-way trees?
Yes, all of these are right-of-way trees.
And were they right-of-way trees on the streets, or they right-of-way trees in the back properties too?
No,
just the street.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Both the 300 and the 1200 that we recently surveyed.
Thank you.
So this is a sample. Well, this is the full 1200 trees that he looked at this time, and the cost associated with making the repair or removal necessary to the tree. So this is the same familiar criteria. We had priority 1, 2, and 3, and then we had either removal or pruning. And then in the bottom, you're gonna see large tree and small tree pruning, which is more of a preventative pruning than it is necessarily a remedial. So when we look at the needs established based on the inventory, this comes to about $388,000 for those 1,277 trees that were inventoried. And that's not as significant by itself, but it's more significant when you extrapolate that to our complete inventory of right-of-way trees, which is a little over 24,000. You take the same percentages and apply it, and we find that we're at about $7.4 million to really do all the restorative and maintenance work needed to complete a full cycle of right-of-way tree maintenance. And that compares to what we learned last year on the 300 trees at about $6.8 million. So still very close and in the same ballpark to do the necessary repairs. Last year's budget was $960,000, including the $250,000 that was added by the City Commission to manage the additional tree work. And this year, through the final step of privatization and some reorganization of how we're managing our tree budget, we're able to bring $1.1 million in contracted services to the battle lines, for lack of a better word. And in doing that, we'll be able to complete a full cycle of tree maintenance in 7 years. But most importantly, we'll have those priority one removals and pruning completed at the end of 2015. And so, you know, that always comes with a caveat that as you're getting those ones down, the twos are growing older, and so, you know, you still can't give up on some of those twos are going to move to ones. But we really feel like at the end of 2015, the most needed repairs will be completed or removed at that point.
2015.
So at the end of fiscal year 2015. Yeah, because we're starting.
That's for the urgent. That's not for the main ones.
That's the urgent.
No, but even then, that's better than
that. That's just priority ones, correct?
That's not true.
And that's the pruning and the...
Yeah.
So just a little over a year from now.
Yeah.
Does that replace them, to the mayor's question?
It does replace them, and so let's talk about that next. We're going to... this is a projected production, and first let me start by saying, in this current fiscal year, we are delayed in managing the replacements. We had a change strategy mid-year, and we currently have two contractors out that we're testing for tree planting. We were trying to do the tree planting in-house, and we found that wasn't working at the speed that we wanted it to work. So we have two contractors in now. They're each planting. How many each?
82 for one contractor and 50-some for for another.
And we're going to watch their work, watch the quality of their planting and their survival rate, and then we're going to determine who will be contracting our tree work next year for planting. But in addition to that, this year, we're showing you numbers here strictly for right-of-way trees, but we have a few strategies that Drew's going to talk about in more detail. But we're also planting many special projects this year. We've done quite a few trees in Central Park, some really nice big trees. We did the Sunrail Station. We did the new City Hall parking lot. We've done the road. So we've done a lot of planting in the community, but not necessarily in the right-of-way. So those trees don't fall into a clean category here that we're showing you, but there are other trees being planted. And then we're distributing quite a few trees, and when we find neighborhoods where we can't replant an oak in the right-of-way because it might be too small or it conflicts with the utility or something, we're using the opportunity there to talk to the neighbor and say, hey, could we plant in your yard? Would you like to see a tree still in this area, maybe slightly different? And so those are falling into our trees distributed category, along with all the baby trees that we pass out on Arbor Day and at Earth Day and distribute through the schools and other functions. So, like we talked about, the fiscal year 2015 plan really gets us through the phase one, the most urgent priority one things. And then 2016 and 2017 are where we're really going to tackle phase two. And Drew is going to go over some of the planting guidelines with you now that talk about why we may not be able to plant every tree to the back in line.
And then just an update on the right-of-way trees. Effective, just, you know, I just did a tally, and right-of-way plantings for this year will be, instead of 184 at this point in time, which it might increase, 220. So it's, that's a little bit better. And so, you know, we are dealing today with issues that the folks that planted our trees 50 or 60 years ago did not deal with at all. So we have more restrictions. Some of those restrictions are the underground utilities. I'm not referring to power lines necessarily, but rather sewer, water. And we have to stay a certain distance from the driveways, the aprons of the driveways. We have to stay a certain distance, 15 feet, from intersections, which if you see a lot of the trees that are coming down are right up next to the corner of the intersection. We can't do that any longer. Decorative streetlights, we need to give that distance so the tree and the streetlight don't interfere and we have conflict with the lighting. So we're dealing with quite a few issues that limit, and also the width of the planting strip. So we're limited to how many we can plant versus years ago when they just started putting trees in the ground. But you know, the distances, you can see 3 feet wide for an understory tree. A shade tree needs to have at least 6 feet to grow properly. And we have also in our quest for planting, we've discovered, and we had this conversation last year, we're finding folks that really don't want a tree in front of their home. In fact, it's been quite a few. I don't have the exact tally right now, but I can provide that if you'd like to know that information. But it's kind of interesting that folks don't want a tree, and we have not enforced that issue at all. We've tried to tell them the benefits of trees, et cetera, but we have not forced that issue to plant a tree in front of their home.
Another thing we're doing is we're working with neighborhoods, and where we can, when we have the opportunity to work with the Public Works Department, when they're doing the street repaving or they're redoing the sidewalks or curb or anything, and we've just done this in Park North, we're taking that opportunity to, if we can, expand the planting space, the right-of-way space for trees. And in particular, in that neighborhood, we narrowed the road by a foot and a half, and that allowed us to increase the available planting space. And therefore, we're going to be able to get in that neighborhood and do some really nice replanting of oak trees in Park North. We've already been approached by Quail Hollow. They've seen the work that's been done in Park North, and so they want to be on a schedule with us and the Public Works Department. and they've even gone as far as to say, well, in the meantime, if you have to take my tree down, please don't put anything back right away. I'd rather wait a year and get a nicer tree when we can coordinate the whole thing, you know. So we are working with neighborhoods in that way to try and revise as many pieces. We're considering trees more like the infrastructure and trying to fit them in as part of the overall process.
Hey, Michelle, regarding planting strip width, and I know you've been working with the public works guys, have you talked about possibly bending sidewalks too? And
Yes, we have.
I know some neighborhoods have that already and some don't, but...
Curving
bend? Yeah, just kind of going around, kind of almost bumping out a planter. I'm not sure Troy's going to like me for mentioning it. I'm not sure if it works or not for you guys, but it is kind of a nice to see a sidewalk kind of meander through a neighborhood, too. And some people like that look, some people don't.
And we're also looking at some alternative materials, and beyond saying that we're looking at it.
Cool.
I've been working with Public Works, and, you know, they're willing to, you know, curve the sidewalk, go out around trees, so we're getting there. It's a slow process, and the opportunity at Park North is a good project because, you know, we can start new, and the trees are failing rapidly in that neighborhood, as you know, and so we're excited about getting that planting project. The
neighbors were thrilled, by the way. You guys did, I mean, working with Public Works and your group, the neighbors were really, really pleased with what's going on over there. We couldn't be happier. So
good.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It was a pretty big undertaking. I mean, digging up roads for 3-4 months, and people are happy.
Because they weren't before.
No, they weren't. So, yeah. It's great. Thank you.
Commissioner Mackin.
You know, I've only got one. And all this is good stuff, and we're moving in the right direction. My biggest concern, guys, is if we plan this out over to 17, we're only replacing about a third of the trees that were taken down. And no demeaning of the comp plan, but this city with only a third of the trees it has now is probably a bigger impact than anything that we've talked about up here in the last 3 or 4 years. We're looking for, you're going to look for something for some funding for the day nursery, and I'm going to look for something for funding a more tree placement, because that's a staggering number. That's staggering. And to say that, you know, we're going to be two-thirds fewer trees someday than we have now is not my vision, personal vision of Winter Park.
I don't think that's our intent at all.
It's just, but at the moment, it's the way it's playing out. And I have no question that the trees to be removed need to be removed. I'm behind that 110%. I think it's the replacing of trees.
Right.
And we're taking out 715 this year and putting 220 back.
So there's a couple of important pieces to that. We've only played this out for 3 years.
I mean, I'm still, you know, 3 years, yeah. You take out, you know, 2,500 trees and you put 500 back, and that's
Yeah, and we might hopefully we can, you know, our goal would be to take a tree out and plant a tree, but that's not feasible due to all the infrastructure that we're dealing with now that we didn't have to do.
Well, I'll also tell you, in my neighborhood, you guys have put, I mean, the trees, Tom, at least the laurels were so close together. I mean, you've taken out three and put in one live, and it's just,
There are things, but when I see that kind of,
I take your point, I'm,
you know,
concerned too.
3-1, I'm going, hey, and you play that out for 5 years, and there's no question they need to come down,
no.
And probably more than what we have, because you're right, the twos become one, the threes become twos, and that happens,
right.
Especially concerning is the fact that we finally realize how many laurels we actually have, which are compounding the issue.
So there's a couple things we're doing, because we recognize that same thing when we started building all the numbers. The first thing that we're doing is we're going to identify our available planting spaces throughout our city, and we're trying to do that by September 15th. We're actually, you know, just like the public works guys go around and drive the roads to do a PASER rating on the concrete, we're kind of going to do our own tree rating on where can we put trees, you know, given what we know about where the infrastructure is. So we're going to try and get a number of total available spaces that we can put trees. That's the first thing. The second thing is, we've shown you 3 years. In the first 3 years, we're really getting through the removals of the worst,
mm-hmm.
the phase one, phase two. And so that's a bulk of the removals that we're going to have to do probably for a good long time. And so our relationship of taking down to planting will naturally balance much more as we get past year three, because at the end of year three, all of our phase two and worst trees will be down. We just haven't shown you that out yet. So like I said, we're intending to really get that available planting spaces inventory done, because we think that'll be critical in helping us find spaces and know where we can replace. Drew's started a program called Touch a Tree Once with electric and general fund money combined now to.
Right, and what that is, when we're out doing electric utility pruning, we'll also lift the trees above the street, the sidewalks, clear for signage. So then, you know, the biggest part of the money in tree work is travel time. So we're already there, and so that's the, and it's working out quite nicely. The contractor's done a great job. I've worked with them. I spent a lot of time honing their skills and trying to make that happen. So it's not common throughout the industry to have that combined, but we're special here, so.
So you're removing all the dead?
Yes, not all the dead, but I shouldn't say all the dead, the major deadwood. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I'm personally thrilled we have an urban forestry plan. This is, and frankly, I think the numbers of removals are far less than I expected. And I don't know, Tom, if it would be good if they all got planted at once anyway. I don't want to be 60 years from now and be in the same state again. So some renewal planting is important.
Well, if we plant the right ones, it'll be 200 years from now.
Well, done right. So hopefully we'll work through that.
I
hear your concern, but we have an urban forestry plan now that I think we can tweak and we'll continue to tweak. And I'm very impressed with the professionals that are involved and can support the investment, unlike a few years ago where it was really pretty haphazard. I mean, we had a tree farm that wasn't that, but we were bragging on it. So we have a plan now, and we know what we need to do. Did you have other comments you wanted to make, ladies?
I just got one more slide, and I think it's important to note that once we get through the seven-year cycle, we believe for the same amount of money or slightly less, we can get to a four-year cycle where we make it through the entire city every 4 years. So that's the long-term goal and the fulfillment of the urban forestry management plan.
I think our citizens will be very disappointed at seven.
Yes, I
agree. We trim our trees every other year and have to. I don't think that seven will cut it. And by the way, our trees are in the right way. So. Should I send you the bill? Or?
You can send it.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Outstanding work. Appreciate that. Good budget conversation, Mr. Knight. Depending on how our agendas go, if you have other items you need to bring to us, that would be important. And we have our commissioners are due your information back to you on the 8th, was it?
4th, I think.
4th, 8th, next week? Is that next week? Great. I'm going to open the floor for public comment. Any citizens wishing to speak to us about matters that are not on our agenda at this point are welcome to do that. Come on up, yellow cards, please.
Thank you.
Beapley, Lake Killarney, 151 North Orlando Avenue. I've never talked about this item before, but it comes up every year. I have a number of acquaintances that get up every year and talk about a overpass walk on 1792. I wish I'd kept a record of how many times that we have talked about this. I think it kind of started with a situation at Gay Road and 1792, as well as Webster Avenue and 1792, when the wheelchair lady was hit by a truck on that northeast corner of 1792 and Webster. We have a situation with traffic that is a big talk in Winter Park right now, and I can see that we've had discussion on Morris Boulevard in 1792 about traffic, Several of the Lake Killarney residents have gotten up here and talked about the turn signal at 1792 and Morris, as you're going down Morris to 1792, and the traffic is taking a right on 1792. It really is not giving sufficient time for pedestrians to cross that intersection. I don't know where this is going. I know this is brought up every year, and the people that usually bring it up are in cooler climates. And so I thought I would bring that up at this time, that we might someday be looking at an overpass somewhere along 1792 for pedestrians. Gay Road, Morris Boulevard, or Webster. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Commissioners, Mayor. Chuck Woodall, Unicorp National Developments. I want to talk to you about a couple of things, and I'll go very quickly. First, there were some questions I was asked, and George asked me if I'd come up today, regarding the Blue Cross Blue Shield and the alternative parking for that. So I want to address that. I would like to also address, we're going to have a neighborhood meeting for anybody who would like to attend in the room, and also commissioners. And Mayor, this Thursday night at 6 p.m. at the Civic Center. And we've been working with Jeff and Dory on a plan that we've had, and I've shared it with you guys, I think, individually, and we've reduced it, and we've gotten it down to something right now that I don't want to be so bold as to say falls within the PD code, but I believe it does. And it's a much less dense plan than we originally had, but yet maintains the architectural integrity that we originally started with. So with that said, transitioning into the Mount Vernon property, as we've gone through this journey trying to figure out what the best plan is for us to put on the Mount Vernon property, and I appealed to you before regarding the suite lodge to put our parking there. And now that there's a lot of activist group in Winter Park not wanting density, not wanting you to change the plans, the path that you've gone down. So we thought it made sense to scale back the program that we had planned. And in scaling that back, it also made sense that the parking we were going to create on the property, the proximity we have to our Trader Joe's project across the street lakeside, that we would bring the parking onto that property, onto the Mount Vernon property, so we would create those extra spaces in the design of the property. So that's our plan right now. We're closing on the property in a couple of months, and we plan on moving the parking that we originally were going to put on the Suite Lodge property to this. In your original approval, you guys gave us the ability to be able to relocate that to another property within a certain circumference. I think it was 500 foot or whatever it was, but we're actually inside of that. So that's where we plan on putting it, is on the Mount Vernon property. We've already submitted an application to do that, and that's the plan. And to address one other quick thing on the Trader Joe's parking, we expected when we opened the center that we would be very, very, very busy. Trader Joe's has been drawing from all over the place, and even corporately when we spoke to them, they told us that this honeymoon of craziness usually takes, you know, a month to a month and a half. And I was out there for a portion of today, and you know, it's starting to lighten up. Saturdays and Sundays are busy, but I spent some time there this weekend too, and most of the people in the store are still, a lot of new people saying they want to come see it, and that will normalize. So anyhow, I just wanted to bring you up to speed on what we were doing, and we're going to host a neighborhood meeting this week at the direction of Dory and Jeff. They thought it'd be good for us to get in front of the community, talk to them, share with the community what we want to do to make sure, as we bring this forth in commission, when we submit our application, that we do have community support behind us, and it's been shown to the community. So if you have any questions.
Thank you for the update.
Any questions?
I have a question for Seth, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
Randy or Dory or Jeff? Currently, with Trader Joe's, the way it's built right now, I know the Blue Cross Blue Shield project is on hold, I understand. That center is built parking. There's no parking allowances that are, I mean, it's currently built to code.
Right, there's no variance.
There's no variance right now.
You did allow them to, they needed 17 additional spaces. You allowed that to be off-site.
That's what he was talking about. We're getting emails about the Trader Joe's, right. The Trader Joe's, and we made,
right, it met
huge
two.
Parking concessions, which
right, it met
originally
two.
We talked about because of Bruce Chris, but when that fell through, this currently Trader Joe's meets parking requirements for the site. That's correct?
Yes.
I'm getting nodding heads.
You're getting nodding heads.
Okay. I want to be clear, because again, I think there's some misinformation out there that the major parking variances were made.
First of all, as Mr. Woodall told you, the fact that his parking is changing, he will have to come in for a revision to his conditional use to show us where his new parking is going to be. So with regard to what was his off-site parking, you will see a conditional use application associated with that one, and we'll process that when all the paperwork gets in. We haven't seen an official application yet, so let me put that one aside.
So is that 17 or 22 units?
We had it as 21. Well, it was 21 from the application that we had. So we'll work with him on that unit count. As to the Trader Joe's parking, and we certainly get a lot of questions about this, when that site was brought in, it was brought in as a 14,000 square foot grocery store. We don't have a section of our code that says you are a unique use, right, and therefore we have to have three times more parking because you don't go through the conditional use process knowing ahead of time what kind of unique uses there are going
to
be. So
it's fair to say we don't have anything in the code that allows us to discriminate.
There's no special column, correct. There's
right.
No special column that says, oh my gosh, you're going to
grocery store,
exactly,
not
yeah.
So popular.
Exactly. So
or
we don't have
restaurant or popular
right. We don't have a code that says that. So when that site plan came in for Lakeside, as you all may remember, originally they were looking for a variance because of a restaurant that was in there. That went away, and there were no variances to the parking. So the parking that is out there meets the size of the buildings that were there. That's what was approved. The fact that it is an enormously popular place to go right now is what is causing the parking, but we have no special code section that says enormously popular parking is required.
And I think, Dory, on the flip side of that, we don't have a category that says here's a very unpopular building, so we're going to give you a discount.
Correct.
On parking, because in the future, ownership changes,
right,
people go out of business, people move, people whatever, and you may wind up with a very popular something.
If we could
something.
Figure that out, well, we'd all be in a different business.
If we could not be sued on that would be
the citizens would be full because they'd be investing based on what we think is popular.
That's the other shoe on that one is that we don't give discounts for something just because they're not.
And that is that is our answer because it is the truth. When you all approved this, you approved it with a 14,000 square foot grocery store with some retail, with some restaurant sites, and it met the parking requirements in the code of the uses that were going in there. So that is the rationale behind that.
And when we increased the size of the Blue Cross Blue Shield building from the bank that it was going to originally be, those parking places were taken care of in the off-site
yes,
location
ma'am.
That we're now trying to
and that out. Was part of the conditional use application and part of that approval process.
And it seems like, too, originally there were two restaurants. Remember, there was the choice, option A and option B. Either we were going to do two restaurants and one of them was only going to be an evening restaurant.
Right, and we were going to have to use a lot
help
of...
Help me understand what happened about that.
Well, the evening restaurant chose not to go there.
Good. Okay.
So now we have the Shake Shack, which is opening this week, we believe, at least from what I understand. And so that will be a restaurant that works with that parking out there.
Great. We're still under citizen comments. So, did you have a question about that? Or?
Well, the question I have is when we made the approval for the Blue Cross Blue Shield building for the off-site, we didn't approve the off-site where they asked us to approve it. We just approved off-site?
No.
I thought we approved it off-site.
You approved where?
Yeah. Where?
Approved
where?
As he said, they did
right.
have a provision in there that they could move it later with, you know, coming back.
But it has come back. It'll come back to us.
That's right. It will come back
it's
to you.
It's staff's intent to bring
site.
That back to you.
Okay. Other citizen comments? The citizen commentary time is still open.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Cynthia Hasnaw with Mead Botanical Garden.
And I'm really here to just briefly say thank you. We appreciate so much the support that you all have chosen to give us over the past years and indicating that you'll continue with that support for the near future. And I hope you all have been out there this summer. The place was coated with little, I'll say, not little yellow birds, but little yellow kids. We had children wearing yellow t-shirts from south to north and left to right in the garden. And we've had so many positive responses from parents. Well over 270 plus kids were out there this summer. And we had a waiting list of 85 children. And this is in our fourth year from when we started with 30 kids a week. And so it's really, really grown. And we just tremendously appreciate your support. We have a lot of projects underway. We're engaging with experts in the community. So we're trying to leverage the support that you've given us well beyond what the dollars are to be able to really be a wonderful destination, not only for our citizens, but also for beyond the Central Florida community. And our partnership with Orange Audubon has certainly proven to be that in the past migratory bird seasons. It's been quite a destination for people who love the birds to come in. And we do have 5 walks planned for later this fall, and I'll make sure you know those dates so you come out and join us. But we have a number of things going on that we want to be very deliberate about our actions. So sometimes you might not see a lot of new activity, but we're committed to not expand our a large building footprint out there. We think that Mead Garden is very precious the way it has so much understory and trees, and we're not about building lots of big buildings, but utilizing the footprint that we have there in the most efficient and effective way. And so we are looking at how to improve the facilities there. I have to say Troy Attaway and John Holland have been incredible partners over the last couple of years, and we work, I think, beautifully together, and we're really working in concert to ensure our vision is strong and is in keeping with what the city would want. So I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you so very much, and we look forward to seeing you out in the garden.
Thank you. Other citizens wishing to make public comment at this point? Seeing none, I'll close the public comment period. That concludes our agenda. I'll go to our city commissioner reports. Commissioner Leary?
None, sir.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
I have a couple of things I'd like to bring up. First of all, is there any plan for us to send this information out to the public in some way that explains things like no raise in the millage rate? That's a really big positive. So what are we doing with that? What are we doing to tell the people out there that we've got this new website that's, you know, pretty cool? I'm trying to figure out ways to get the positive information that's happening in this community out to counteract some of the negative.
We are putting out our annual budget update, you know, the quarterly newsletter that we do. The next one is the budget one. We'll have something in there about our website also.
Yes. The website will be in there, and the budget.
Yeah, and we'll put in there about the website too.
And something about all the kids we're serving. So I guess what I'm really saying here is I'd like for you to bring back to us a plan to get the positive message out to our community. Because when I hear all the great things that are going on, the other thing, I see Francine in the audience, the artwork is up. You know, it looks great. It's there now, but at the station. But
we need an event.
We need to celebrate it so
that's
everybody
coming.
Knows. I'm sure it is, but I just want to make sure that all these things that I see as being great positives are known throughout the community as being big positives. So I wanted to mention the kids we served, especially this summer, even what we just talked about with trees, because that's been a huge issue in this community, but that message needs to get out. So I don't know what the answer to that is, but I'd like to see something out there to get that information in the hands of the public. And that's it.
Commissioner Cooper? Commissioner Leary, am I going back in? Excuse me.
As what, Commissioner Leary? Not a thing.
Sorry. I attended on this last Friday, actually our city hosted at the Welcome Center. I was proud to help arrange for that. The Orange County Council of Mayors, a group that gets together on some routine basis. Mayor Jacobs presented, I'm asking the city clerk to distribute this, and probably the city attorney needs to keep a copy of this at some point, or we need to make him a copy, which I can do. The county's work product about the potential, it's two-sided. If medical marijuana passes as a state constitution, there are numerous, and I in no way, shape, or form want to make any bias one way or the other. I'll personally be voting no, but because there's plenty of opportunities for people and patients to get them this in the form they need. But there are a lot of questions that are going to be coming from this. So if this passes, for example, can a person smoke marijuana in a public park? Where would this be dispensed, and how would it be dispensed? So the county has started to look at doing this, and we will have several options, and I would trust the city attorney would probably weigh in with city staff. Two communities or two cities in Central Florida, Belle Isle and Maitland, are taking their own action. Other cities are waiting for the county to take its action. If the county takes action, we're not obligated to take any additional action. I guess we could take something that would be more restrictive than the county, but we're not obligated to take any specific action. There will obviously probably be state legislation that, if this passes, that may or may not restrict and or change this issue, but this creates a host of issues. Our police chief, I know, is actively involved at the state level, also in terms of what are some of the issues that might come from this. I would like to see a nod of three to ask our city attorney to be able to study this, to work with the county attorney if there's something. I'm seeing at least two or three.
Yeah.
I see three, Mr. Brown.
Yes, sir.
I'm not asking you to create an ordinance. I don't know what the right thing to do at this point is, but I think we certainly need to track the county's ordinance through this. See if it can be applicable based, and tomorrow actually there's a Board of County Commissioners work session on the topic, because this is something that we need to be ahead of to assure the safety of all of our citizens, not just those that may need medical marijuana. But I, for one, don't want to wake up and walk down Park Avenue in Central Park and realize that people are smoking marijuana. I don't think that would be good for our citizens.
Yes, sir.
You wouldn't want me to take, if I had a prescription injection, you wouldn't want me to be injecting myself in Park Avenue either, probably.
That's right.
It's a critical issue that we look at. So.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That concludes my report. And with that, unless there's any further comments or any commentary, we will sit adjourned. God bless you all.
Thank you, sir.
By acclamation.